A new book out today dives deep into the world of McDonald's. It's about Ray Kroc, who built it into a global empire, and his wife Joan, who gave their fortune away, including $200 million to NPR. The book is called Ray and Joan. It's by Lisa Napoli, formerly of Public Radio's Marketplace. Lisa, welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much, Jeremy.
And we have so much to talk about here with these two people. But let's go back to the early history of the McDonald's chain, because I have always thought that the first McDonald's was in Des Plaines, Illinois. But as you point out, it's in Southern California.
Yes, yes. And many people think that because, of course, they call it the first McDonald's restaurant in Des Plaines. If you ever have traveled through there, it's set up as a little mini museum. But no, it started in San Bernardino, California. Actually, it started even before that over in Monrovia. And there were two brothers named McDonald. And they were seizing the moment as the suburbs developed, Southern California's roadsides developed. And they, like many people, saw a future in making hamburgers.
And they were really innovative. They had perfected assembly line food production, paper goods instead of glass and china. Tell us about some of the things that they were doing that were so new and important in the business they were getting into.
Right. These guys, in order to cut costs, Dick and Mac McDonald's sat there and looked at how they could move the hamburger, move the fries, move the shakes through the system fast enough so that they could compete with all the other roadside hamburger stands by getting the food to the people as quickly as possible. And so this little assembly line that they came up with was very precise. It was choreographed really well, and it distinguished them from the others and created a terrific customer base for them and set them apart from the others.
And enter Ray Kroc, who was a multi-mixer salesman, which McDonald's used for its milkshakes. How did he get involved?
Ray was selling these six-spindled multi-mixers, and the multi-mixers were designed to help make as many shakes as possible. And of course, the McDonald's brothers not only had one, they ordered a number of them, and that sort of put them on Ray's radar even more specifically. So he went to pay a visit and was so blown away by this choreographed dance of the hamburger that he went to the brothers and said, "Hey, look, I think this is a great idea. Let's sell it elsewhere."
And they did expand, and eventually he actually bought them out.
Yes, he did. He bought them out. They went off into the sunset, literally. They never really did much again. And he took it and ran with it and grew it bigger and bigger.
And by the way, spoiler alert, McDonald's did very well. Ray Kroc made a lot of money. And we'll get to what happened with that money later. But one of the things that amazed me was these guys, Mac and Dick McDonald, ended up with what? $12 million or something like that, and he ended up with billions.
Right. You know, it's one of those things we were familiar with the dot-com days. You know, somebody invents a piece of technology and sells it out to Microsoft, and Microsoft turns it into a multi-billion dollar affair. That's exactly what happened here. Ray asked the brothers to name their price to go away, and the brothers said, "Hey, you know, we'll take $2,700,000, $1 million for each of us and $700,000 to pay the taxes." That's how practical they were. And they were happy with that. They never expressed dismay that they didn't become fantastically rich. Of course, a few years later, McDonald's stock began trading publicly on the open market in 1965, and Ray became multi-millionaire, this celebrated businessman. So, yeah, it's just the way things work, right, Jeremy?
I guess so. And all the while, there is this romance, on and off romance going on between Ray Kroc and the woman who would eventually become Joan Kroc. Introduce her to us, and how did they get to meet each other and fall in love?
Joan Kroc was a young woman playing organ in a very nice supper club in St. Paul, Minnesota. And Ray Kroc was going around the country looking for people who might be interested in opening up franchises of McDonald's. He went into this restaurant for dinner to meet the owner of the restaurant. And there was this beautiful woman playing organ at the center of the restaurant. And Ray was a pianist himself. He'd made a living as a pianist early on in his life. And so he asked to meet her, and he fell in love with her. She was married and had a young child. He was married, had been married for a very long time. And this spark flew between them. And Ray sold that boss, Joan's boss, Jim Zine, a McDonald's franchise, which Jim Zine hired Joan's husband to manage. And thus their lives entwined forever from that point forward.
But they broke up more than once. And all the while, interestingly, Joan Kroc was also in the McDonald's business with her husband.
Yeah. So her husband was so good at running this McDonald's in St. Louis Park that he got a good bonus. He was hardworking and he wanted to open his own McDonald's. And Ray said they could open their own McDonald's, Joan and her first husband, Raleigh, if they would move to Rapid City, South Dakota. They moved there and Joan worked with him, as was the case. Women weren't allowed to work front of counter in McDonald's then, but wives of owners were allowed to work, encouraged to work behind the scenes. And Joan worked behind the scenes at this Rapid City McDonald's, ordering potatoes and other supplies, helping him crew up, at first overseeing construction of the Golden Arches there. And so she was definitely in the thick of things in the early days with her husband, as her husband built this restaurant and made, as many of the early franchisees did, a really excellent living. And he did such a good job, he got the right to build another couple of McDonald's in Rapid City, too.
When Joan Kroc and Ray Kroc finally did get together for good and get married, they had a very difficult relationship. It sounds like he was drinking all the time and was abusive, and yet they stayed together. Tell us a little bit about their marriage once they finally got together.
Yeah, she finally married him in 1969, and it was very tempestuous. Joan even filed for divorce in 1971, a couple years after they did marry, and then very mysteriously decided to stay. And having been enrolled in Al-Anon and other support groups, decided to coalesce this early movement of addiction counselors. And even though she had just a high school education, she basically created an organization that made films that aired on national television and produced books and pamphlets and other outreach to help deal with the problem of addiction from the family's perspective. So she turned her pain and the difficulty of marriage with Ray into this veiled sort of asset to help other people.
The reason that I know the name Joan Kroc is because she left $200 million to National Public Radio when she died. Now, Ray Kroc, by the way, died in 1984. Joan Kroc lived until 2003. But when she died, that was one of her big donations. She also gave $1.5 billion to the Salvation Army and some money to other places as well. But why did she love NPR enough to give that much money?
Basically, she had become friendly with the local development director at KPBS because that woman's husband had been in his last days at a hospice that Joan had funded in San Diego. And Stephanie Bergsma, the director of development at KPBS, her husband had passed away in this beautiful facility. And before he died, he'd written to Joan and thanked her for building it. And Stephanie received a call from Joan. Her husband had passed away. Joan invited her to lunch, and a friendship ensued. Joan had given some modest gifts to KPBS, and Stephanie invited Kevin Close, who was then the head of NPR, to come talk to Joan. And Joan was so dazzled by his spectacular articulation of the importance of media in a free society that she just basically fell in love with it. And posthumously, Kevin Close was the recipient of this spectacular call that said, sit down and keep writing zeros. Joan has left you an enormous sum of money.
So square that, which is just an amazing story, with the fact, as you write early in the book, that she also liked to just get on her private jet, fly to Las Vegas, and gamble $1 million away. It seems so different of a person that would give that much money to these kinds of organizations and also, fritter away money like that in Vegas.
Oh, that's what's so great about her. And, you know, every turn, I just kept thinking, I wish I could sit down with this woman because she's so fantastic. I mean, yes, it was fantastic. She was the steward of this fortune. And she felt this great responsibility to make sure that it got put to good use. But at the same time, she wasn't, you know, living a little Mother Teresa life. Not that there would have been anything wrong with it. That would have been a fantastic other story. But what was so great about her was that her favorite possession was this private plane that she had. And on it, she flew girlfriends to go shopping or gambling, but she also flew former Mayor Maureen O'Connor of San Diego to Grand Forks, North Dakota, to inform the mayor there that she was going to give an anonymous gift of $15 million as flood relief to the people who were literally drowning from the floods there. So she sent that plane around to do amazing work, both, you know, from the heart and also for fun.
That's Lisa Napoli, whose book is Ray and Joan, The Man Who Made the McDonald's Fortune and the Woman Who Gave It All Away. Lisa, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Jeremy.
To all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and a special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles.
The Big Mac song, and we've got an excerpt of the book at our website, hereandnow.org.